content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Lisa Maxwell, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. In today's episode of Education Today, we'll be exploring articles from the Braille Monitor, which is the publication of the National Federation of the Blind, and this will be from the January 2026 edition. The first article I want to share with you today is the Convention Bulletin of 2026. The National Federation of the Blind National Convention brings together blind people from across the country and around the globe. We come from all walks of life. Some of us have been blind all our lives, while others may be new to blindness. Some are young. Some have been around the sun more than a few times. Some are convention first-timers, while others have been attending for decades. Our collection of individual experiences makes us stronger together, and it means that our national conventions are a celebration of our diversity. Over the course of 85 annual conventions, nearly three dozen cities reflecting similar diversity have played host to the NFB's biggest event of the year. Yet among this eclectic list of destinations, our convention has never come to the capital city of Texas to gather and celebrate. This will change next July when we head to the JW Marriott Austin for our annual national convention. Austin is widely known as the live music capital of the world, having been home to the PBS program Austin City Limits for more than 50 years and host to the annual South by Southwest Music and Media Festival. Austin also boasts a vibrant art scene with many public art displays throughout the city. But Austin isn't just fueled by creative energy. A strong technology sector thrives there, with many tech companies having established headquarters in the city. Waymo and Tesla are two notable names, as both companies offer autonomous vehicle rides within Austin. The University of Texas at Austin, with over 50,000 students, sits just north of downtown. Visitors will notice an emphasis on local retailers over national chains. This broad and eclectic diversity perpetuates the popular Keep Austin Weird vibe and makes for a truly unique destination. The upscale JW Marriott Austin will serve as our headquarters hotel, while the recently opened Austin Marriott Downtown, just a short walk away, will provide overflow space. All convention events will take place in the headquarters hotel this year. Both hotels offer a number of dining options, 24/7 fitness centers, and rooftop pools with cabana rentals. The hotels are in the heart of downtown Austin, surrounded by local restaurants and shops. A few blocks south, walking trails line the section of the Colorado River known as Lady Bird Lake. Our 2026 convention hotel rate is $139 per night for singles and doubles. Triples and quads are available for $155 per night. Sales tax and a tourism fee total a combined 19%. You may book a room as early as January 1st. Look for reservation details in the January issue of the Braille Monitor and at nfb.org/convention. For each room you book, the hotel requires a deposit of the first night's room rate, taxes, and fees payable by credit card or a personal check. If you use a credit card, the deposit will be charged immediately. If a reservation is canceled before Sunday, June 1st, 2026, half of the deposit will be returned. Refunds will not be issued after that date. And I want to share with you the convention schedule. The 2026 Convention of the National Federation of the Blind will be an exciting and memorable event with an unparalleled program and renewed dedication to the goals and work of our movement. A wide range of seminars for parents of blind children, technology enthusiasts, job seekers, and other groups will kick the week off on Friday, July 3rd. Convention registration and registration packet pickup will also be on Friday. Breakout sessions continue Saturday, July 4th, along with committee meetings. On Sunday, July 5th, it will begin with the annual meeting, open to all, of the Board of Directors of the National Federation of the Blind. National division meetings will follow that afternoon and evening. General convention sessions will begin on Monday, July 6th, and continue through the afternoon of Wednesday, July 8th. Convention ends on a high note with a banquet Wednesday evening, so be sure to pack your fancy clothes. The fall of the gavel at the close of the banquet will signal convention's adjournment. So make plans to be a part of the 2026 National Convention. To ensure yourself a room in the headquarters hotel at convention rates, you should make reservations early, and the hotels were ready to take your calls beginning January 1st. The next article I have for you is titled, The Myth of the Super Blind, and this is by Cricket Bittleman. And from the editor, Cricket Bittleman has contributed to these pages before on the topics of fostering inclusion and helping blind people to understand our full potential. Here are her thoughts on how myths of what the Federation expects or is perceived to expect can present barriers to inclusion and how this can be avoided. And here is what she says. When I entered the National Federation of the Blind about a decade ago, I noticed a tendency among some other members to hold up role models that I will call the super blind. People, many of whom were in leadership, whom they perceived to be capable of anything and everything. At the time, I was a high school student, and I was awed by the concept of these people. Occasionally, I was accused of being one of them. But I am not, for reasons I will describe in this article. While mentors and role models are crucial to our movement and to our individual development as blind people who live the lives we want, I have come to believe that demonstrating our philosophy of blindness isn't about being good at everything, and that when we emphasize the skills of our leaders too much, we can unintentionally create a barrier to entry or full participation in our organization. When I was little, I often memorized directions for Mom, who admitted to being navigationally challenged. I could tell from various context clues about how quickly she drove, and as a result, about where we were on a route. I would tell her things like, when we get to, insert street, turn right, but be careful of the trolley tracks. I am now navigationally challenged myself since I take medication with the unfortunate side effect of making me dizzy almost constantly. Directional corners are now very much beyond my grasp. I am ashamed of how often I use a GPS when traveling independently, even to places I've been to dozens of times. I walk a lot because it's good exercise and affordable, but I do often feel like I have something to prove, like if I work hard enough, I can be as good as or better than I used to be. I can reach that super blind travel standard, whatever it is. I used to be proud of how good my memory was. I didn't brag about it because there was no reason to, but it certainly was a strength. If you gave me a telephone number or a story about you and your family, they would be in my head forever. Some thought I had a photographic memory, which I did not, but it was clearly above average. I did very well academically, and I wanted to go into physics because I had an aptitude for it. College math kicked my butt, though, and then I started having medical issues. For various reasons, including brain surgery, that memory is no longer there. It might be what is called working memory, or maybe it's short-term memory. I forget which. I now have to work hard to remember those things I used to just know. Someone had to remind me of her shellfish allergy probably a dozen times before I remembered, and now I'll never forget, but mostly out of embarrassment. My parents refused to allow me to learn daily living skills, which my teachers and I often argued with them about. One day, one of them sent me home with a packet enumerating reasonable expectations for blind students of various ages. And though I found using a can opener fairly intuitive, I couldn't do much else. As with many kids presented with a forbidden fruit, I desperately wanted to learn to cook, and I often read about food science. In college, I taught myself how to cook based on what I learned, and I am proud to say that I am especially an avid baker. There was always more to learn about cooking and housekeeping, though, and if there is one thing I love, it is learning. Although I wouldn't mind if I didn't have to do laundry. These examples illustrate how my skill set has changed, even over just the last decade. The navigational and memory issues are a matter of circumstance, and although I wish my parents had let me learn to cook, there's a chance I wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much as I do now. I was never one of those mythical super blind, and I'm certainly not even further from, and I'm certainly now even further from this unreachable bar. I have more disabilities than I did back then, and my strengths and weaknesses have changed. Unfortunately, some of the worst oppression has come from within my own community, and I know others have similar experiences. There's a lot of literature supporting this for various minorities. We reasonably expect empathy to come from within the Federation because no one understands the blind experience like blind people do. But some probably unintentionally have made me feel like a burden because of my navigational, memory, and back issues, all of which I'm insecure about. I am not innocent either, though. I have made others feel similarly, the vast majority of which has been unintentional, and if I have done that to you, I unreservedly apologize. Being more intentional about avoiding microaggressions is essential if we want to help everyone feel welcome in our community, and it is something we should all work on, including me. This is one way to foster inclusion, which is one pillar of what the Federation stands for. When we hold up people as mentors or role models, we should remember that all of them are likely to have insecurities and things they are working on. Creating a community in which individuals feel comfortable being vulnerable is impossible when we think of and advertise others as the super blind. Externally, I strongly dislike when I meet someone who, upon finding out that I am part of the National Federation of the Blind, says, "Oh, so you're one of those Federation people," with a tone clearly conveying their perception that we feel we're somehow superior. We are not, and I haven't met too many people who actually feel that way. Especially in a world seeking to divide us based on wealth, disability, or lack thereof, or any number of characteristics, we really can't afford to convey this attitude either to others not yet part of the community or to those within. The myth of the super blind does not describe who we are. Instead, it tempts us to measure ourselves against fantasies rather than realities. The philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind teaches something different, that blindness is not what holds us back. Low expectations are what limit us. Low expectations tell us that as blind people, we cannot do anything. That is certainly toxic. But so is claiming that we can, or must, do everything perfectly. This is an unattainable standard. Our collective strength lies not in an image of perfection, but in the truth that blind people, like all people, grow and change. We learn skills over time. Circumstances shift. New challenges emerge. None of this diminishes our capacity. Instead, it reminds us that we build competence through opportunity, community, and belief in one another. The Federation builds a world where blind people can live the lives we want. This means building a community where no one feels the need to perform invincibility. It means supporting each other as we try, fail, learn, adapt, and succeed, often in ways that look different from one person to the next. When we embrace the full range of blind people's experiences, we deepen our understanding and strengthen our movement. If we reject the myth of the superblind, we make room for something better, a philosophy grounded in dignity, shared responsibility, and real expectation. We become a community celebrating both vulnerability and authentic success where everyone belongs. This is the future the Federation is building, one where we recognize that none of us must be superhuman to be equal, capable, and free. And the next article I have for you is titled, The Key to Keeping Benefits While Saving for the Life You Want. And this is by Jesse Shirick. Have you ever dreamed of being able to save money to buy your own home, go on a Caribbean cruise, or purchase that Monarch Braille display you've always wanted without affecting your federal benefits? Have you wished for a way to invest your savings so your dollars grow tax-free and to be able to withdraw money when you need it most without penalties or negative consequences? It may sound too good to be true, but if you became blind or disabled at or before age 46, you likely qualify for an ABLE account. And that is A-B-L-E, a benefit that far too many people are unaware of or simply not using. The Stephen Beck Jr. Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, commonly referred to as the ABLE Act, was signed into law on December 19, 2014. This groundbreaking legislation made it possible for eligible disabled individuals who acquire their disability before age 26 to qualify for an ABLE account. On December 29th of 2022, Congress expanded this opportunity through the ABLE Age Adjustment Act, increasing the age of onset to 46. As of January 1st, 2026, millions more blind and disabled Americans now have access to this life-changing savings tool. An ABLE account is a special tax-advantaged savings account that allows qualified blind or disabled individuals to save money for disability-related expenses without losing eligibility for federal programs that have strict resource limits. That definition is accurate, but it can still feel abstract. So let's talk about what it actually means in your everyday life. Let's use the example of Pat from Pittsburgh. Pat is a blind person who receives Supplemental Security Income, commonly known as SSI, and is not currently working. Under SSI rules, Pat is not allowed to possess more than $2,000 in cash or savings without losing their benefit. Like so many people, Pat used to feel trapped, unable to set anything aside for the future. But once Pat learned about ABLE accounts, that changed. By saving money in an ABLE account, Pat can now set aside up to $100,000 without jeopardizing their monthly SSI payment or other essential supports. ABLE accounts also ensure that individuals can maintain eligibility for other important programs like SNAP, which is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, Medicaid, and affordable housing programs through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Instead of worrying about losing benefits by saving too much, ABLE account holders are finally able to plan ahead and build security. In 2026, an individual can save up to $20,000 per calendar year in their ABLE account. This is known as the annual maximum contribution limit. If the account holder is working and not contributing to a retirement account through an employer, they may be able to save even more. It is remarkable to think that gifts or donations from family and friends can now go directly into your ABLE account without counting as income that could reduce or eliminate benefits. For example, a cash gift given directly to you may be counted against your SNAP eligibility, but when contributed to your ABLE account, it will not be counted as income at all. Money saved in an ABLE account must be used for qualified disability expenses, but that phrase covers far more than people first expect. Funds can support health needs and costs associated with maintaining or expanding independence or quality of life. This means ABLE funds can be used for food, medications, medical care, housing costs and utilities, transportation, clothing, or employment-related needs. Quality of life matters too, so travel, hobbies, and entertainment also qualify. I recommend holding on to receipts for purchases made with your ABLE account funds, just in case you ever need to verify that your spending meets the intended purpose of the law. ABLE accounts are administered at the state level, and today, 46 states and the District of Columbia operate ABLE programs. It's a good idea to review your own state's program first, because some states offer state tax deductions or tax credits. If you live in a state without its own program, or if you simply want to explore your options, you can enroll in another state's program. You may find that an out-of-state program offers lower fees or different investment options that better suit your goals. Many programs offer a basic savings account as well as investment portfolios with higher earning potential. Each state's program is different, so it's worth doing a little research to make sure you choose the one that is right for you. Because ABLE accounts operate as investment accounts, there are a couple of ways to spend the money. You can transfer funds into a checking account when you are ready to make a purchase, or you can request a debit card from your ABLE program. Returning to our earlier example, Pat finds the debit card option especially helpful because they do not yet have a strong enough credit history to qualify for a traditional credit card. Their ABLE debit card works seamlessly to pay for rides on Uber, Lyft, or Waymo, making daily life more convenient and supporting independence. Another powerful way to use an ABLE account is for meaningful long-term savings. Pat's older brother, Roger, became blind at age 34 and only recently learned he now qualifies too. He plans to begin saving a portion of his earnings from his sales job, choosing more aggressive investments so that his savings can grow tax-free. When Roger eventually needs to use that money, and as long as he spends it on qualified disability expenses, he will not be taxed on the growth or withdrawals. I hope this article has helped you see just how valuable an ABLE account can be. You no longer have to feel stuck living benefit check to benefit check, unable to set money aside or plan the life you want. You deserve the opportunity to dream, to save, and to build a future filled with possibility. If you would like to learn more about ABLE accounts, I encourage you to visit ABLE.com. today.org. The site includes a wealth of information about the rules governing ABLE accounts, as well as detailed comparisons of every state program. You can also reach out to National Federation of the Blind Government Affairs Specialist Jesse Shirick at jshirek@nfb.org or by calling 410-659-9314, and you'll need extension 2348. Did you know that January 4th is World Braille Day in honor of Louis Braille's birthday? He was a French educator and the inventor of a reading and writing system named after him, Braille, intended for use by visually impaired people. His system is used worldwide and remains virtually unchanged to this day. Braille was blinded in one eye at the age of 3. This occurred as a result from an accident with a stitching awl in his father's harness-making shop. Consequently, an infection set in and spread to both eyes, resulting in total blindness. At that time, there were not many resources in place for the blind, but he nevertheless excelled in his education and received a scholarship to France's Royal Institute for Blind Youth. While still a student there, he began developing a system of tactile code that could allow blind people to read and write quickly and efficiently. Inspired by a system invented by Charles Barbier, Braille's new method was more compact and lent itself to a range of uses, including music. He presented his work to his peers for the first time in 1824, when he was just 15 years old. In adulthood, Braille served as a professor at the Institute and had an avocation as a musician, but he largely spent the remainder of his life refining and extending his system. It went unused by most educators for many years after his death, but posterity has recognized Braille as a revolutionary invention, and it has been adapted for use in languages worldwide. We've run out of time for today's episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed today's show. I'm Lisa Maxwell for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. You can listen to and share Education Today as a podcast, now available on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode or wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, please call us at 919-832-5138. You may also reach us via email at info@ncreadingservice.org. We look forward to hearing from you. So long until next time.